Yes, same question.
We got a similar question from Chinese devotees and Russian devotees.
Oh,
and
really?
The Chinese question is from Lakshmi Rani Didi in Chongqing.
Hare Krishna.
So her question is, we know that this life is full of sufferings and miseries, especially because of illness, aging, and death. How can we live happily in the midst of this suffering and fear? And how can we, I want to do service to serve Sri Krishna, but how can I do it while I'm working or staying with families? Mm-hmm. And the Russian question is, once you said that although all living beings all in this world are suffering, this world still look beautiful. Why does such contradiction take place?
Well, toward the latter part, that question, I believe, perhaps in the introductory section of the book Sri Krishna Chaitanya, published by Gaudiya Math, but authored by Professor Nishikanta Sanyal. And in the beginning is an introduction from Srila Saraswati Thakur. And there's, like, I don't know if it's 64, but a list of so many things Krishna is, and one that, how do you say, all contradictions are harmonized in him. And maybe I'll get back to the first question. It's a question of understanding, first and foremost, always, who is Krishna? And what is Krishna? So Guru Maharaj, the first book that we published was called The Search for Sri Krishna, Reality of the Beautiful. So he's saying reality, and the ultimate reality means the ultimate reality, actually, whenever we say reality proper. Saying he's beautiful. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. This is the Vedic Avarasam, that like truth, auspiciousness, and beauty. But Guru Maharaj says the parallel is also Sat Chit Anandam. So Anandam and Sundaram, these things will always be together. Beauty, Anandam means happiness, ecstasy implies loving ecstasy, loving affection. So it's very important to understand who Krishna is and what he represents. So he's reality, the beautiful. Everything about Krishna is beautiful and loving and charming and sweet. The Vedanta says, Anandamayo Vyasat. The absolute is by nature joyful. He doesn't have to do something to achieve its happiness, meaning he's in an unhappy position. And then he has to move from the unhappy position to achieve happiness. No, he is Anandam Murti, happiness personified, Akila Rasamrita Murti. And you can say there's, let me say, infinitely. So there's no room for more. He's infinitely that, yet he's expanding that position. It's already at an, you know, the maximum, infinite maximum, yet he's expanding the joy, Anandam. And Raso Vaisa, he's full of rasa, or that means taste. Everything that we want, that we aspire to, the sundarupa, the beautiful form, the beautiful sound. Like Guru Maharaj said, sound enhanced with beauty is music, movement enhanced with beauty is dance. Taste, touch, smell, all the aspiration of the senses are realized and coming in connection with Krishna. So Jayadev Goswami writes, Vishvesham manuranjanena janayan anandam indivara shreni shamala kamala upanaya anangotsavam. I think the Krishna, it's like his form is a Cupid festival. Right? It's hard to translate, but everything about Krishna is seductive and attractive. Therefore, Krishna, he's attracting everyone to him. Krish, that's what Krish means. He's attracting everyone to him by his beauty, charm, and sweetness. And Na, nourishing them with anandam, happiness, pleasure. So, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur has written in one place, Vishwa Purnam Sukhayate. Vishwa means the universe. And what he's saying, it's Purna Sukh. Like the name Guru Maharaj, Purnananda. That's also described. So he's saying the universe is full of joy. Then we might think, what universe is he talking about? Because in the Bhagavad Gita, we hear these general spiritual principles discussed. Krishna saying, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. That what's to be seen about this world? The darshan, the perspective on the material existence, different types of not sukh, Vishvam Purnam Sukhayat, not sukh, happiness, but dukh, unhappiness, misery. What are they? Here, they're briefly, and she alludes to this in her question, birth, death, old age, disease. These things are inescapable in this plane. So it's not possible to make a program here based upon a sort of happiness that is absent these recurrent miserable conditions. Birth, death, old age, disease. Every day in the news, we hear of some famous person, a movie star, or someone from long ago, like females, women particularly, someone who is such a beautiful woman, considered to be one of the most beautiful, attractive women in the world some years ago, and now age, illness, and at last death. So one English poet, Thomas Nash, he wrote a poem called Litany in the Time of Plague. You know, there was a plague in London. And was it East London or everywhere? East London and other parts of London. Maybe some people think East London is a plague. You can erase that part. But anyway, there was a plague in London, and it was no laughing matter, and it was so many years ago. And he wrote in this famous Litany in a Time of Plague, each line ends with like, Lord have mercy, we must, I am ill, I must die, Lord have mercy. But one of the lines there, he says, Beauty is but a flower, wrinkles will devour, brightness falls from the air, queens have died both young and fair. It's similar to, Grumar's like to quote Gray's elegy, the boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, all that beauty, all that, that wealth e'er gave, a way to like the inevitable hour, the paths of glory lead but to the grave. And I've mentioned also the Russian chanson, this type of song you hear on the Russian radio sometimes. And these songs are saying, basically, however nice things may be going today, tomorrow you could wake up dead, in that case not waking up, but wake up dead, be under arrest, investigation, you've lost everything. So whatever, however nice things appear right now, it's uncertain. Full of uncertainty we are. So Krishna's saying, wait, the material world is filled with inescapable suffering. But then Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur is saying, it's full of ecstatic joy. So then how can we harmonize these two things? But to understand a perspective. So as Lakshmi Rani is saying, these things are inescapable, and how are we to have happiness? The devotees, they like to present themselves as being relatively happy within the suffering existence. So how is that possible? By a change of perspective. We told the other day the famous Bhagavatam sloka, Samasrita ye parapalava plavam mahatpatam punya yasho murare bhavam budhir vatsa parampadam parampadam yad vipadam tesham. Vatsa pada means the calf foot, hoof. And he's saying this material world, Kaler Doshini De Rajan, it's oceanic in its inauspiciousness. Right. We hear the ocean of nashans, bhavabdi, the ocean of suffering, material suffering, an inescapable ocean of suffering, right. Inauspiciousness, oceanic magnitude, these sort of things are there. That means insurmountable. We're surrounded by that at every step. But then it's saying, but if you take shelter of the Lord, which means through his devotees, then what was oceanic is reduced to a drop. How is that possible that what is an ocean now looks like a drop? Perspective. A change in perspective on how it is seen. So in Bhagavad Gita, Guru Maharaj makes this parallel between the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, after mentioning these different miserable conditions, or earlier, Krishna says, Matra sparshas tukontiya shitoshno sukadukada. Like now we're wearing sweaters and scarves. Because the seasonal change. So he's saying, in Prabhupada's words, the non-permanent of period appearance of heat and cold, happiness, distress. He said, they're like seasonal changes. Agama payano nityas tams tatikshasva bharata. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, since these things are inevitable, my advice to you is to tolerate them. Right? So, you know, we put on the sweater and the scarf, we're tolerating, making small adjustments. That's one way to approach is tolerate the situation and try to make the best use of a bad bargain to progress from that position. But the parallel Guru Maharaj draws in the Bhagavatam, he's saying, tattenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. That samiksha means to examine, susamiksha means to examine with great scrutiny. So he's saying, if you look, yes, that's the situation, but if you look deeply into these circumstances, into the background, you'll see the friendly hand of Krishna. That the world, the so-called world of suffering, it hasn't been arranged in this way just to make your life miserable. Right? What kind of a God would that be? Right? One who lives in isolation, who has no friends, associates, and has nothing better to do than to these living beings that he's created to make their them suffer. It's a type of sadistic portrayal. Yet at the same time, we say, well, is that not our situation? It depends on the perspective. So the Bhagavatam is saying, if you look deeply to these karmic circumstances that we're surrounded by, apparently inescapably, so then we'll have to consider and knowing, you know, bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram, that Krishna's in control of everything. So I'm in circumstances that I deserve. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I've generated these karmic circumstances. Krishna's ultimately controlling everything. Is he, everything he does, is it friendly to me or unfriendly to me? Is he friendly to me or antagonistic to me? And not just in some philosophically abstract way, but the very circumstances that I find myself in. Are they meant to take me down or to promote me? In school, there's the examination, the test. And sometimes I remember the so-called flash quiz, which was dreaded by the students. That means the teacher's instructing them, their books are open, and suddenly without warning, the teacher turns and says, everyone close all your books, we're gonna have a quiz. And usually there's a collective groan from the students, like, oh. Because the teacher's thinking, this instruction is going on, and you seem to be listening, and you have your book open before you, but I wonder to what degree you're actually grasping what I'm trying to tell you. So now, close the books, flash quiz. This happens to us. This happens also in the devotional line. Some test comes unexpectedly. Right? And there's some apprehension on our part, anxiety, but, and we might even think that the teacher is being cruel, right? That the teacher is not benevolent, thinking of our welfare, why they're testing us in this way, trying to make us fail. But actually, the teacher is not trying to make the students fail. The test is not unfriendly. It's actually meant to help the student make progress. That's why they're being tested and examined. And so the same thing happens in life and in the life of the aspiring servitor. So we need to understand, you know, two things are before us. There's the material world that is characterized by inescapable suffering, sooner or later in one form of another. Right? Janma mrityu jara vyadhi, birth, death, old age, disease. These things are inescapable. Right? We may think, no, science, they're working on this, or and through technology, that still they're inescapable. It just shows up in another form. So we say, that's this world. So shall I seek my happiness in a world that, as someone said, being caustically humorous, he said, you know, life is full of suffering, and then you die. Right? So Woody Allen said, you know, that life is full of suffering, and it's so short. Right? To show the paradox, the predicament that we're in. Right? But that is inescapable. So that means this world. So is to seek happiness just in principle, is that some sort of delusion, an impossibility? The poet, I believe Vidyapati, says in one of his songs, it's like looking for water in the desert. So looking for water in the desert does not mean that there's not some place where water where flows nicely or extensively, expansively. It just means not in that place. So the happiness that we seek that impulse is doomed to failure in a world that is also, in the words of Bhagavad Gita, anityam asukam lokam. There it is again. Asuk means unhappy, but add to this anityam, temporary. So that means even if you arrange for everything to be in your favor for some time, the world is temporary. It has to come to an end. So one way or another, we're brought to the position of lamenting. Like we hear the word shudra, and Guru Maharaj, he once said, it actually means one who is wailing or crying, lamenting. So he said, who is a shudra? One who has accepted this world as all in all will inevitably have to lament, because the paths of glory lead but to the grave. We're living in the world of mortality, yet we're seeking immortality. So to seek immortality in the mortal world is doomed to failure. So the option is to redirect ourselves towards the immortal world. That means internal culture, spiritual culture. And from that perspective, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur can say, you know, the universe is full of joy and happiness. Because that's the world as he perceives it, the spiritual world. So it means internal culture. Right? We're told the Vaishnavas, yad kripam buddhi paraduka duki, their only unhappiness is seeing the suffering of people for want of Krishna consciousness. So they very mercifully extend Krishna consciousness to others. So back to the original point, to understand Krishna. Krishna is by nature full of joy and ecstasy. It's in forgetfulness of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna that we come to suffer. So it means the cure is remembrance. Just as in the Gopi Gita, their unhappiness is feeling separation from Krishna. But this is so-called unhappiness that's categorically different. Right? So what do they say is the cure? Tavakatamritam tapta jivanam kavibir iditam kalmasha apaham Svavanamangalam Srimadatatam Bhuvi Granantite Buridajana. I say, talking about you, talking about Krishna, his pastimes, his qualities. You know, saying this brings a relief to the suffering that we're experiencing. So we can say that in both cases, their suffering and the suffering of the people here, it's on account of the general heading of separation from Krishna. In our case, forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna has brought about this kind of separation. The cure is the same cure that is being recommended by the Braja Gopis. That's also the cure for us. Shrotavyas, kirtitavyas, cha, smartavyas, chechtatavayam. To hear about, chant about, and remember Krishna and his devotees. So from that position, being in connection with Krishna through divine remembrance, and Krishna who is happiness personified, then even in this world, one can experience real pleasure or happiness. Rupa Goswami says, Iha yasya harer dase karmana manasagira nikalaspapi avastashu jivan mukta suuchite. Jivan mukta suuchite means one can become liberated from suffering in this life. How? Karmana manasagira. If one's activities, mind, speech are Krishna centered, then it's possible. How to do that in a family situation or work situation? Well, what first comes to my mind is the Mukunda, the physician, in Mahaprabhu's pastimes. He was the royal physician to the Muslim governor, I suppose. And they had appropriated the divine paraphernalia. So one morning, which means like peacock fan and other things, they're like fanning the governor with the, you know. So they're on a veranda balcony. The sun is shining down. So they're shielding the governor with a peacock fan, right? We know what the peacock fan is. Where is our peacock? Okay, there it is. Right. Looks like the fan of a peacock tail. Right. So many peacock eyes. So while Mukunda, he's a vaidya, a physician, he's giving medical advice to the governor. And the governor's attendant is shielding him from the sun with the peacock fan. And so Mukunda, while speaking to him, he sees the peacock feathers. And even though he's assumed the persona of an ordinary person, of an ordinary physician, and he's keeping his devotional position concealed, when he sees the peacock feather, it brings about this intense remembrance of Krishna. And the sloka is there. Barha pidam natabara bapu karne o karne karam bibrad basa kanaka kapisam bhai jayantim chamalam malam randran venu Adhara Sudhaya Purayan Gopa Vrinde Vrindaranyam Swapada Ramanam Pravishad Gita Kirti. The description from the gopi vision, the gopis, how they see Krishna and Balaram. We could hear this sloka. It's describing Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys as they enter the forest in Vrindavan. So we could think, oh, perhaps its emphasis is sakyarasa or friendship. But actually, it's from the vision of the Brajagopis, how they see Krishna. They're on their verandas and they're looking at Krishna while he's playing his flute and they're all singing and dancing. That's how they go herding the cows into the forest. And what they describe, they say, barhapidam, he's wearing the peacock feather, right? Above Krishna's lotus eyes and the smiling lotus face of Krishna is the peacock feather adorning him. And it's a nadabara, he looks like a movie star. And he's so, all his movements are perfect, his confidence. Narabara Bapu Kane Okane Kane, and he has flowers behind his ears. And he's wearing a Vaijayanti mala, which means like a rainbow colored garland due to all the different Vrindavan forest flowers that are being presented there. It's very colorful. Rundran Venur Dhaya Sudhaya Purayan. And he's sounding the flute, and from Krishna, the nectar from Krishna's lips is entering the flute, right? Which is making the flute shiver in ecstasy. But then the flute is streaming nectarine sound into the air, and everyone, as we know, they're saying, two ears, what? This Brahma is a fool. Two ears are insufficient. We need millions of ears to capture all this nectar. Two eyes are insufficient. We need millions of eyes to look at the beauty of Krishna. So there's a shower of nectar in the air. Vrindaranyam Swapada Ramanam Pravishad Gita Kirti. And Vaikuntir Prithivyadi Sakala Chinmoy, the soil of Vrindavan is also conscious. Everything is conscious in this realm. The birds, the trees, the water, all personalities, all consciousness. Just like in a play, someone can play, like sometimes the children, they come home to their parents from school, and the parents hear, they're in a play. So they ask the child, and what part do you play? And the child's saying, I'm a flower. I say, oh, that's very nice. You're a flower, lotus flower. So you can play the part of a flower, a tree, a river. It's like that. So it's a Vrindaram Swapada Ramanam. So Krishna is playing the flute. The environment is being showered with inconceivably beautiful nectarine sounds, maddening everyone. But they're dancing, the lotus feet are touching the ground, and we're told the earth, who's the female, at the touch of the lotus feet of Krishna, is shivering in conjugal ecstasy. So what is not possible in the pastimes of Krishna, in that world, Vishwam Purna, where everything is not only blissful and ecstatic and happy, but ever expanding. Anandam Bhurivardhanam Pratipadam Punamritasvadanam Sarvatmasnaparam Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So Mukunda, just by seeing the peacock feather, it reminds him of this. And what is the effect? He loses consciousness of this world. So we'll say, oh, he fainted. He fainted. But this is not, regular fainting means to lose consciousness. This type of fainting is on account of losing consciousness of this world and being overwhelmed of the Krishna consciousness world. So he's in the upper world of ecstatic joy, and he's lost his senses. And this way, he's fainted. So the governor and his attendant, they start, you know, put the cold towel, water, fan him. And gradually he comes back to consciousness. And they say, "Where does it hurt?" And he says, "It doesn't hurt anywhere." And then he says, "Oh." Then the great devotees, they always want to keep themselves concealed. So he says, "I suffer from epilepsy. Every now and then I have an epileptic seizure, but I'm okay now." Right? So we can say, well, that is the great devotees. Are you suggesting we'll be, you know, in the work, I'll be in the workplace and have some remembrance of Krishna, and then I'll be fainted at my desk? No, it won't be like that. The one man who came to see, remember Sankhya Jog? The Bengali gentleman would come on the veranda in Dum Dum Park, always saying about Sankhya Jog. And so he was saying the reason he didn't want to take Harinam, because inevitably it came up because he was like a regular. The reason he didn't want to take Harinam because Mahaprabhu says, "Kirtaniya Sadahari, I'll be taking Harinam incessantly, and then I won't be able to live in the world." And nothing, you know, I said, "Yes, the planes will fall out of the sky if the pilots start chanting Krishna Nam." So, but let us understand what the superior devotees are like. So then this is telling us what we can extract from that is that it means if we're sincere, aspiring servitors, practitioners, then even when performing ordinary activities, it's possible from time to time to have some remembrance of Krishna. That's all. This is an example of how high that sort of culture can go. But after all, there should be some, we call this Krishna consciousness, some improvement in our consciousness. We're seeing, observing so many things. Right? Gradually, we'll see them in relation to Krishna conception. That's not impossible. We're not talking about becoming in a fainted position. Not now, at least. But gradually, how we view the world, where we say the primal guru mantras, Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Umilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Chaksu means the eyes, saying our eyes are cataracted by acquired prejudice, acquired tendency. Right? It's like cataracts over the eyes. Spiritual knowledge, spiritual illumination, what we hear from Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnav, is removing the cataract, this eye of ignorance, and restoring proper seeing. So what we're learning is and cultivating is how to see things in relation to Krishna. Shastra Chakshu, how to see through the eyes of scripture. And we shouldn't think this is impossible. We go to school, we have our family, through your family, they're teaching you to see things in a particular way. Right? Mother and father, sister and brother. Then there's society. Society is teaching one to see things in a particular way. You go to school, they're teaching you how to see things in a particular way. None of this, it's not, the knowledge is not being given in a neutral way. devoid of a worldview. All of this comes with a worldview. And the modern world particularly is at the basis is humanism. Different varieties of humanism, saying that human being, we're man, human being is at the center of existence, and everything will be measured against this standard. So this is moving from egocentric view of the world, of life and everything, to theocentric, God-centered. What's the first verse of the Isha Upanishad? Isya Vasyam Idam Sarvam. Isya Vasya, God-centered, theocentric, a theocentric view of the world and circumstances. Not to trouble others. If someone has to live in a family situation, the work situation, it's like being a secret agent of the absolute. Because as they get Yani Sha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Samyami. What is the time of awakening for one, morning for one, is night to another. So for those who live in an egoistic, humanistic, centered existence, theocentrism is anathema, right? They feel threatened by it, as much as those pursuing theistic culture may feel somewhat threatened by humanism. It's natural. So what is required is faith and dedication, right? How seriously we pursue Krishna culture. Just like the Olympians, right? Olympic athletes, say the swimmers or the gymnasts. This pursuit dictates all aspects of their life, of family life, social life, their diet, what time they wake up in the morning. This sole pursuit dictates all other interactions. So, that means they have to get up early. They have to not eat certain things, to eat certain things, to be disciplined. That it dictates their social life, even their family life. Why? Because they're pursuing a very high goal. They want to get a gold medal or medal. And so how do they achieve this? They have a coach and a team and teammates. What does it mean? They understand we need to get all the people together who have this similar pursuit because they will help one another by their association. Very difficult to do this by oneself unless you're extremely motivated. But we see time and time again, they have a team. That means it's another word for association, right? So all the people say, yeah, that's my goal too. I also share your goal. Right? They may not have known each other previously, but the mutual pursuit of this goal has brought them together. This sort of arrangement is inescapable for people who want to make progress and do something, achieve something extraordinary. So they have the team, which means an association. And what do they have also? The coach, right? Who in this parallels the guru. So they're there to they're coaching the individual members of the team, this association, to achieve this goal. With the Olympics, it's easy to understand. But actually, this principle is employed everywhere for every type of serious pursuit there is. So as Guru Maharaj might say, so for spiritual culture or the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, should it be equal to that or greater than that? Like they're making certain sacrifices as well. So this sacrifice in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness be an equal sacrifice of an Olympian or a greater level of sacrifice? When the end result is that the infinite comes under the control of the finite is the outcome of the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. Not that that is the desire of the devotee, but the experts like Rupa Goswami have made this observation. Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. So we are pursuing something that the spiritual experts have said, the ultimate outcome of this pursuit as the infinite Supreme Lord comes under the control of that devotee. So what sort of sacrifice would be appropriate for that? In fact, it doesn't seem, what's the word? Like commensurate or fair. The finite, even sacrificing the whole of the finite, shall get the infinite, and that this transaction? It's lopsided. On one side is the infinite, the other side is the finite. And we're hesitant, saying like, and I'll have to sacrifice everything? Name this everything that you have. So much everything you have, Mr. and Mrs. Finite. Right? I'll be giving up some. What are you giving up? I'm giving up my, my position and the line, the queue for mortality, right? And the mortal world. I've accumulated a lot of stuff here. Mrityu sarvaharas chaham. One way or another, you have to give it up. That's Bhagavad Gita, where he said, if in no other way you can realize me, at last you'll realize me as death when everything is taken away. Right. So even we know this without theistic culture, that the point will come, even from a material point of view, when everything, you know, they say you can't take it with you. Everything will be taken away from you. So it means you have between now and then to do what? Voluntarily relinquish that position. That is what tapasya is. To voluntarily relinquish the, and all it is ego. Ahang mameti, the assertion that something is mine or that something belongs to me, when in fact nothing does. So, what does it say? Ramante yogino anante sachidananda chidatmani. Spiritual pleasure, happiness is there, but it's achieved through dedication to internal culture, as opposed to the type of pleasure that is achieved from exploiting the environment and others. As Guru Maharaj said once, that there's a joy that comes from stealing, like when the thieves take inventory of what they've stolen. Well, there's that. There's a type of happiness there. He said, but there's another joy in giving that we're told is a superior type of happiness. So, one sort of happiness is sought by envisioning oneself as an exploiting agent, establishing oneself as an absolute center and trying to expand the circumference of one's exploiting capacity as a means of self-fulfillment, self-realization, and happiness. And the other is a shift towards theocentrism. To understand that we're part of the infinite, of the perfect. Srila Gurumayi says, it's as if a part of the perfect appears to be imperfect. Right. So that's realized and reviving our Krishna conception. And we're told that can be done, you know, in the home, grihe tako, bane tako, sadahari bole tako. Ban means forest or sannyas. It means whether grihasta or sannyasi. Nartam says the same thing. Grihe ba bonete take ha goranga bole take narotama mage taro sangha. But it's how to keep connected to that plane, to that ecstatic plane, means by service and association to Krishna's agents, Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnava. And what I was saying with regard to it's the world of suffering is that all these different life forms, Manu says, Tamasa bahurupena veshtita karma hetuna. We're all these forms, bahurupena, and ignorance of one's actual spiritual identity. Veshtita karma hetuna. He said, we're in our karmic dress. One type of karmic dress is human being, another karmic dress is an aquatic, an animal, a bird, an insect, a plant, or a tree. So it's all different forms of karmic dress. So in one sense, I was just pointing out, and this is on the basis of something I read in a purport of Srila Prabhupada in either the third or fourth canto, I can't remember exactly where. He's saying how astonishing it is. These living entities are suffering in these karmic circumstances, but it looks so beautiful. Beautiful trees, beautiful flowers, beautiful animals. So it's something astonishing. But if we go back to the center and understand, ultimately, everything that comes from Krishna, we see, we will trace it back to the central conception of reality, the beautiful Krishna conception.
Another question. Mm-hmm. Is Krishna mentioned in the scriptures of other religions?
Well, when Mahaprabhu was making his way from Bengal, trying to go to Vrindavan, and so many people were following him, and Rupa Goswami at the time was again employed in the service of the Muslim governor. Reports were coming to the Muslim governor about this mystic personality who was ecstatic and singing and dancing Krishna Nam. Tears were pouring from his eyes like the Ganga stream, surrounded by lakhs of people, hundreds of thousands of people following him, and he pointed out, and they were not being paid. They were not on payroll. That governor, getting this report, asked Rupa Goswami, who do you think this is? Well, you know, what's your opinion about this? And interestingly, Rupa Goswami said, you're the position you have, you've achieved by the grace of the Lord. So ask your heart, ask yourself in the deep core of your heart who it is and accept that answer. And he said, I think this is that person who's described in our scriptures as divinity. I think it's that person. So he had a highly evolved level of Sukriti to understand his scriptures, what was being described as divinity. He got the sense, this is that same person, what's been described here. So other scriptures, they're presenting partial representations of divinity, of Krishna. The majestic aspect, how else? It is not very specific regarding the personality of Godhead, but they're dealing in essential theistic concepts like that God is great or the greatest. Right. Parabrahman, in the words Gita, Bhagavatam, and elsewhere. So you can say by inference, they're making reference to Krishna, but in a partial way. It's not fully expressed there. Like what to speak of other scriptures or other religious traditions. When the Brajagopis, when Krishna played a trick on the Brajagopis by hiding from them, they thought they saw him hiding in a kunj, the kunja, and he, to fool them, pushed out two more arms so that when they arrived, Rupa Goswami said, Rago Daya Kunchiti. Their rag, what they were feeling in their hearts, it was crushed. Their heart sentiments were crushed by seeing Narayan, Vaikuntha Narayan. So what is Krishna conception? They're seeing the Lord of Vaikuntha, Narayan, and they're disappointed. What will be their reaction to other religious ideas? If they were disappointed to see Vaikuntha Narayan. And their standard is what we aspire to. They accept no substitute. That is Gopi Bhav. There is no Dwaraka Krishna is a disappointment. What do you think? Vaikuntha Narayan? Dwaraka Krishna is a disappointment to Radharani and the Brajagopis. And he looks like Krishna. More or less. But they're saying, what kind of Krishna is it without a flute? And not, you know, where is his Gopavesh? Why is he dressed like a king and no flute to be seen? What is in the hearts of the Brajagopis? What is Gopi Bhav? So if they will not be satisfied with Vaikuntha Narayan or Dwaraka Krishna, do you think they could find some satisfaction in these other more or less impersonal descriptions about divinity? Or, you know, looking at the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, I don't think so. Is that clear? I mean, there are leaders. They set, call the tune, they set the standard. Right? Nothing there for them. Right? No Radha, no Krishna, Nanda Yashoda, no Gopa, no Gopi, no cows, no Jamuna, no Vrindavan, no flute, no prasadam. So what is there? Some vague description about the greatest. Not untrue. Look, in the pages of Charitamritam, in the beginning, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami saying, when he's explained, there's Krishna, then there's Balaram, but it, I mean, the word then is misleading. You can say Balaram is, you know, the first other than Krishna, but it's not like Krishna was alone and then he thought up Balaram. No, they're just explaining to you, there's Krishna, Balaram, Maha Sankarshan, the Chatur Vyuha, Karna Daksha, Maha Vishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, Kiradakshai Vishnu, Ananta Shesh, from Ashesh Ananta, so many avatars are coming out in the world. Right? And so, Kaviraj Goswami there says, so if someone says, and mentioning, like we say in the song, Avatar Sar, Gaur Avatar, Mahaprabhu and Krishna, they are both, all the incarnations, avatars, are within them, merge within them, are within them, particularly when they appear. So they can show many different things, but, so Kaviraj Goswami says, if someone says that Mahaprabhu, his, you know, Kiradakshai Vishnu. And he's saying, it's not untrue. He said, but is that like a glorification? You know, with all due deference to Kiradakshai Vishnu. Saying, who's, you know, a part of a part of his part is that. So it's not untrue. That's, but that is not to add to his glory. Right. So, he's trying to help Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, trying to help us understand properly who is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Nityananda Prabhu. What does it say in the song? Brajendra Nandana Ye Sachi Shuta Hoylo She Balaram Hoylo Nitai. But when the avatars come and appear in this world, there's a channel through which that is done. He's saying, according to the bhav of a particular devotee, they're seeing the Lord in a particular way. So if we wanted to be generous, because we'll say, first of all, and that's why some Krishna Akila Rasamrita Murti, I mean, he's Ramachandra. And Balaram is Lakshman. That's not untrue. Right? So he's showing that. Also, Vaikuntha Narayan. But, Ete Changsa Kalak Pungsa Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna's Swayam Bhagavan, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from which all the others have come. So if we wanted to be generous, we can say, well, on some level, this is how the Lord is being represented to someone. They're following that or appreciating that. In principle, that is a good thing. But then it needs to be developed from partial to a full representation. Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagawan. And we're told, just like the sun, there's the sun rays, the sun, but from a Vedic perspective, there's the sun planet, the sun god, the denizens of the sun planet. So for one perspective, like that Upanishadic sloka, Hiranmayena Patrena, they're blinded by the effulgence. But those with pure devotion, they're not blinded by that effulgence. Just as in the aftermath of Devi Bhav, of Mahaprabhu in the house of Chandrasekhar, we're told the house, after this divine play, performance, the house was glowing like the Brahmajyoti for days. And when some people would come by, they couldn't see anything. But that's not the case for the devotees. Because of devotion, they can penetrate the light and see the form and the personality is there. So for the devotees, even that light is not so-called impersonal. That's a perspective on Brahma. The devotees are seeing everything in relation to Krishna. Brahma, Paramatma, and Bhagawan. Why is repeatedly, when Krishna Bhakti is described and is from Krishna and Mahaprabhu is always mentioned, four types of liberation are sometimes referred to, saying why the pure devotees are not interested in them. What is it? Salokya, Samipya, Sarshti, and Sarupya Mukti. Not the fifth. Why? Sayuja, which means merging. Never, that idea, notion cannot be entertained by a devotee proper, because there's no, devotee means seva. Service possibility. They want to serve the Lord. As they conceive the Lord properly, they want to offer themselves in service. Merging or impersonalism, it does not allow the possibility of service. So it's kaivalyam narakayate, Narottam Thakur says, hellish. That's hellish from the perspective of the devotee. No one to serve. No concept of someone to serve, to offer yourself to serve, to love. It means the absence of love and affection and devotion. Not possible. So, any description of God that is vague or tending towards impersonal doesn't allow for loving service, and that's not appreciated by devotees proper, pure devotees. But it may be accepted as a general theistic principle of like going in a particular direction. I remember flying to Tomsk in the winter time, like around this time. And the plane arrives at like maybe 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. But and there's just snow everywhere. But You know, so we're flying in the darkness the whole time. Then how do you first perceive the city? You just see light from a distance, light. So if someone were asked you to describe what you see from that position, you would describe light, and it wouldn't be inaccurate, and it wouldn't be insincere on your part. You'd be saying, this is what I can see, I'm describing that to you. But as we go near, gradually you start to see forms appear. The city lights and city landmarks and things like that. Then when you land on the ground, you meet the people. Right? So it's something like that. From a distance, we can expect some vague description about divinity, comparable to light, non-personal, impersonal. But it, by definition, it means a distant realization. And it does not allow for the opportunity to serve. You cannot serve the light, right? Or embrace the light, or have a loving, affectionate relationship with the light. Right? So it disallows devotional interaction. But coming closer, it starts to become localized and differentiated. And then landing there, everything is revealed. So Brahma Paramatma Bhagavan. Right? And what we hear further in Charitamritam, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is giving some insight into the candid position of Krishna, where he's saying that if someone's consideration of me is predominated by Aishwarya Gyan, means knowledge of his opulences, his majestic aspect. He's saying, if that is constraining the natural flow of love from their heart, then I'm disappointed. Bhavagrahi Janardhan, Krishna is a bhav consumer, a heart consumer. So you're saying, the very thing I want is being constrained by someone's being overwhelmed by my majestic aspect. Right? So what is he saying? That, but those, my friends, those who see me as an equal, so much so that they challenge me. You think this captures my interest. And think about it. Here's God, the infinite divinity, and here's a tiny finite being, not out of arrogance or insolence, but out of love and affection, wants to play with him and challenge him. Krishna is saying, this is heart melting to me. Right? And I mentioned this example that, and it's all divine and wonderful, but just for the sake of analysis, with folded palms, bowed head, we hear of Krishna riding on the shoulders of Garuda, right? And how ecstatic Garuda is. Right? He's got Krishna riding on his shoulders, you know, saying, "I couldn't be happier," and it's a beautiful, divine image to see. And we can certainly understand that. You know, his feathers must be like standing in ecstasy. Yeah. Right. But Krishna says, speaking candidly in Charitamritam in the intro, says, when I'm playing with my friends, we play these games, and the loser has to carry the winner on his shoulders. So what are we told? Devotion is the infinite being defeated by the finite, coming under the control of the finite, defeated by the finite. That's where devotion is detected. The infinite is defeated by the finite. So what is the outcome? So Krishna has to carry that devotee on his shoulders. Now he's flying. And he's saying, this I love. I've got the devotee on my shoulders. He's in the superior position. I'm defeated by my devotee. I'm acknowledging the defeat. And how wonderful that is. I'm carrying my devotee on my shoulders. And he goes further to say, and if my beloved, the word Bartson, Priya, Bartson, if my beloved is cursing me, right? And sometimes Man, Radharani, she's their loving pastime, is for some reason angry at Krishna. She's cursing Krishna. Krishna says, that steals my mind away from the reverential hymns of the Vedas. That's more sweeter to my ear. It's capturing me. These are Krishna's opinions. Saying, so Radharani's cursing him is sweeter than any prayer that any religion can make. That's how we can understand that. So, and here he mentions the Vedas. And what are they saying? How great he is. And how wonderful he is. And she's saying, you're not so great, and you're not so wonderful, and right now, like Gaurav said, in one pastime, Radharani's told her servitors, if Krishna comes to my kunja, he should be forbidden entrance. And Krishna comes. So what is the service of that devotee? What world is that where the service of the devotee is to tell Krishna, you can't enter here. Who's omnipotent, omnipresent, all omni. Right? Saying, I'm sorry, you're forbidden entrance at this time. Your call is important to us. So how sweet are those pastimes? And even in this world, if we can have some remembrance of that, we can taste some happiness. Hare Krishna.